As 1819 turned into 1820, not all was well on the West Africa station. Although a deal had been done with the Dutch to allow the Royal Navy to intercept Dutch slave ships, this involved forming a new mixed commission in Freetown to judge the cases of the ships thus brought in, and many in the squadron were of the opinion that the newly arrived Dutch judge was actually in favour of the slavers, if not outright colluding with them, since in multiple cases he afforded them every courtesy, but had recently denied the captain of one of the anti-slaving vessels not only any access to legal counsel, but even denied him access to some of the seized evidence in the form of the slave ship's papers. In addition, although in January 1820 four ships of the squadron were all present in Freetown, Tartar was due to head home soon, Morgiana and Myrmidon were by most standards only able to sail in emergencies thanks to outbreaks of tropical disease that had debilitated some of their crew and killed others, and thus Thistle was actually the only ship that was technically fully operational. Nonetheless, the four ships decided to pair off alphabetically and head out on one more set of patrols. Intelligence was received that the former commander of the slave ship Louis, which had fired on Royal Navy ships before being forced to surrender back in 1816, was now back slaving in a brand new ship and boasting of getting revenge on Captain Hagen, who himself was now commanding the Thistle. Although Thistle was only a brig herself, she was manned by experienced Royal Navy sailors, not whoever happened to be able to scrape together to man a slave brig, and so Hagen thought very little of the threats. The presence of the 36-gun Tartar helped with that assessment as well. Sending boats up the River Pongus, the two ships quickly found a Spanish and a Dutch ship both loading slaves and captured them, running off two schooners who were awaiting their cargo. The bias of the Dutch judge was quickly apparent once again as the two prizes were taken back to Freetown. The Spanish vessel was rapidly condemned by the regular commission, but the Dutch ship, which fell into the purview of the mixed commission, had its trial delayed by a week, with Commodore Collier of the Tartar refused permission to flat-out attend or to take legal counsel by the Dutch judge Van Sertema. He was only allowed to make his own written submissions without further guidance. Sertema then declared that 10 out of the 12 slaves found aboard the ship were actually, in his view, crewmen, despite the slaves' own objections to this description of them. He would continue in this vein in other cases during 1820, to the point that Collier actually wrote a strong letter of complaint to the Admiralty over the summer and made sure it was dispatched by a very fast ship. Meanwhile, Myrmidon and Morgiana found half a dozen schooners elsewhere. Five were empty, but the sixth tried hoisting a French flag, but on inspection was not only carrying over 100 slaves, but the papers aboard suggested she was actually under the employ of the Irish slaver whose operations they'd infiltrated earlier. They sent this ship off as a prize before spotting two other schooners, these Portuguese. One of them spotted the Royal Navy ships and started offloading its human cargo by boat, a trick it had used when encountered before, except Myrmidon was too quick this time, catching up with and boarding the ship before the last slave could be taken off. A few days later, the two ships also intercepted an actual pirate and its prizes. Unfortunately, from this haul of five ships that they'd taken, the two with slaves found aboard ended up having to be released. The Portuguese vessel, because the Portuguese judge hadn't arrived yet, and the mixed commission decided that the other one had purchased its slaves legally, the Irish slaver's connections in Freetown apparently still being in his employ, since it was very obvious that this wasn't actually the case, and the vessel was escorted to French territory as per its claimed flag. Tartar and Thistle had somewhat better luck, chasing down half a dozen French and Spanish ships, including one ship in which the British were horrified to discover two children sealed in a barrel in an attempt to avoid detection by the inspection party. This was bad enough, but compounded by the fact that the ship was taken on the second try after an initial chase a few days earlier had been unsuccessful, but during that chase, the schooner had been observed throwing multiple barrels over the side. It appears that the French ship, La Jeune Estelle, was confident of making a transatlantic voyage, so one can only surmise what followed was a creative way by the crew of the Tartar to express their disgust in a way that wouldn't get them immediately court-martialed. After a thorough inspection, which found several more carefully hidden slavers, and involved the Tartar's carpenter prying open much planking, it was declared that the Estelle was now in such poor condition she was unlikely to even reach an African port safely, given the weather, which was closing in, and so the slaves were removed to the Tartar, and with the Estelle's papers marked, she was ordered to make her own way to Gore for trial, with just her slave crew aboard. Sadly, it seems the ship survived the passage. There were now 6 ships in the West Africa Squadron, as Pheasant and Snapper were also on hand, but as spring turned into early summer, all of them were frequently forced to sail south to cooler climates to try and deal with repeated outbreaks of tropical fever, which sapped the strength of those lucky enough to survive. However, there were some positives as well. USS Cyan, another veteran of the War of 1812, in this case being USS Constitution's final successful capture of the war, turned up to help. Although an attempt by an accompanying US ship to found a Freetown-like colony with some freed slaves ended rather badly when the chosen site turned out to be disease-ridden, full of hostile locals and often preyed on by slave ships. After a few months, the survivors were relocated to another site, named Monrovia, which would eventually expand to form Liberia. In 3 months, the Cyan captured 8 ships which her captain, Trenchard, determined to be American slavers, although it was only possible to send 4 of these vessels as prizes back to the US, since the other 4 had papers claiming to be Spanish, who the US Navy didn't have a treaty of inspection with. Trenchard remarked that although he was certain the released vessels were American, every ship that he'd boarded had multiple sets of papers, each from a different nation, allowing the ships in question to claim whatever nationality most suited them to dodge the inspecting ship's authority. The 4 ships retained as prizes seem to have mistakenly thought that Cyan was a British vessel, and had thus tried to claim American protection, realising too late their mistake and unable to change their tune once an American vessel boarded them. Although briefly reinforced by USS Alligator and USS Shark, the American formation quickly discovered another problem. The slavers had far less fear of them than they had of the Royal Navy. Of 5 French slavers that they captured between them in May 1820, 3 of them returned to slaving by means of their crews rising up and overwhelming the prize crews that had been placed aboard them. Elsewhere, Thistle faced yet another issue. A British merchantman had been seized by a group of men who sometimes dabbled in slavery and at other times in piracy. An attempt to take the pirate ship, found upriver by one of Thistle's boats, failed when the boat was fired upon and captured, taking a number of casualties in the process. However, while this left Thistle too undermanned to attempt sailing upriver itself, it rightfully annoyed the ship's captain, who headed back to Freetown and quickly returned with Myrmidon, Morgiana and Snapper in company, plus 3 companies of troops. Thus reinforced, 200 troops plus Thistle and Snapper began a progress up the river, while the 2 larger ships lay in wait at the mouth in case anything slipped past the other 2. Soon they came upon the combined pirate-slaver fort, and although boats were sent under a flag of truce, the fort fired upon them even while flying its own truce flag. This time, though, their gunnery was off, possibly because the boats had been armed with carronades and returned fire. Faced with bombardment from the ships in the river and a determined assault from the men of the 2nd West India Regiment, the enemy fled. So the British forces took all the guns and supplies they found back to their ships and then burned the fort and its surrounding houses to the ground. With these out of the way, they then received word that a local chief had been cooperating with the pirates and he had the survivors of Thistle's seized boat as captives. They resolved to go and deal with them the next day, but an overnight storm left Snapper aground. Not to be outdone by the weather, the ship's crew just joined the troops in an overland march, attacked the chief's town, but found that the captives had been moved once again, so they burned this town as well, and headed back to help move Snapper off the mudbank. While they were doing this, word arrived from further upriver. Other local chiefs and a British trader, having heard of the scorched earth policy that the West Africa Squadron ships were pursuing, had managed to force the release of Thistle's captured crew, and these were duly sent downriver to rejoin their ship, with Snapper and Thistle now both back afloat, heading back out to sea again with their mission accomplished. summer also saw an uptick in fortunes generally. The Portuguese judge for the mixed commission arrived, and he proved to be decidedly anti-slavery. The Morgiana deterred an attack on a British settlement by showing up and impressing the locals with its artillery, and although spread thin by disease, the ships of the squadron were well served by junior officers being promoted early to replace sick or dead seniors. By autumn, USS Cyan was preparing to head home, but was heartened when her replacement, the USS John Adams, showed up, having already fallen in with HMS Snapper, both ships on their way for another expedition to the River Pongas. Unfortunately, the captain of the John Adams proved to be somewhat less resolute than that of the Cyan, and when a large contingent of obviously American slavers were found under false Spanish colours, he refused to board them. The John Adams was soon recalled for other duties in a little over a month. The winter of 1820 and the start of 1821 were fairly quiet. The Portuguese judge on the mixed commission had to go home due to illness, and so the next Portuguese slaver captured was taken all the way to Brazil for judgment. And along the way, they found an African Royal Navy crewman hiding out who raced aboard the Morgiana. He related that he'd been part of a prize crew of 9 men put aboard the slaver Vulcano do Sud almost 2 years earlier. Partway to Freetown, the slavers had attacked the prize crew, killing the 5 British sailors and attempting to enslave the 4 African crew, 2 of whom had jumped overboard instead. The other 2 had been sold in Brazil as slaves, but this one, known as Quashy Sam, had escaped and eventually made his way to a port where he found the British ship. The Vulcano do Sud was marked for special attention should it be encountered again. Back on the African coast, Tartar and Thistle had come up with a cunning plan. They would send the smaller Thistle ahead under Spanish colours into the River Bonny. Here she managed to bluff a local pilot into thinking that they were slavers, and the pilot then offered to take them to a secret anchorage upriver. When he came aboard, the crew then captured the pilot and forced him at gunpoint to take them there. They then boarded the pilot's canoe and used that to launch an assault on an ostensibly Spanish schooner that was anchored there already. The vessel was only rated at 172 tons, but had almost 500 slaves crammed into its hold. Those in the worst health were sent back to Tartar, which was then signalled to send its own boats upriver, while Thistle's crew pressed on and found a Portuguese ship, which fired on them briefly before being overwhelmed. Since she only had 85 slaves aboard, another large batch from the first ship were moved over to this one for the voyage back to Freetown. The first ship, now with only about half the original number of slaves aboard, was sent straight there, with the slaver crew placed in irons under the enthusiastic guard of the erstwhile slaves. This was done as punishment, as the slavers had attempted to sabotage the ship. Tartar, Thistle, and the second prize took a slower route, stopping to top up water before sending the second prize onwards while the 2 warships ducked into the old Calabar River and seized 2 more Portuguese slave ships. Again, one with almost no slaves aboard, but the other so crammed together that not only was disease rampant on board already, but when some slaves were moved over to the other captured ship, a dead slave was found under the press of all the others. From there, Tartar sailed for home, leaving the rest of the squadron to continue operations. Myrmidon continued to be a plague on slavers when she sent boats back up the River Bonny. First, they found 6 French slavers, which that year's rules of engagement forbade them to touch, but helpfully, one of the French captains told them that there were 2 Spanish slavers further upriver. When Myrmidon's boats approached, they were heavily fired upon and forced to withdraw. Captain Leake decided he'd had enough, and he spent the next few days taking detailed soundings of the river while awaiting a spring tide. When the tide caused the river to rise, he took the entire 6th-rate frigate wholesale up the river, captured both Spanish slave ships, whose crews had fled at the sight of a full-on warship bearing down on them, and then he sent his own men ashore to round up the Spanish slavers, taking both ships with a combined 242 slaves out to sea with him. Landing them all at Freetown, he charged both captains with piracy for firing on men of the Royal Navy and saw them both found guilty and hanged. Snapper captured a couple more slavers, while USS Alligator showed up for another cruise, once again finding slavers at sea far more aggressive in their actions against the US Navy than the Royal Navy. In one encounter, she ended up in a full-on gun duel with a Portuguese slaver. Alligator won the duel quite handily, thanks to having actual trained gunners aboard, and sent the prize to Boston. When it came time in early 1822 to head home, Alligator left behind a tender with a volunteer crew to continue her work. This tender asked for the Royal Navy's help with manpower, and between them they found and seized an American slave ship which couldn't hide behind an American flag when the ship that came to board it was from its own country. Shortly after this, the US Congress actually did something useful for a change and recommended an agreement with the British whereby the US would allow the Royal Navy to board suspected slavers under US flags as long as US Navy ships had the same right to board ships flying a British flag that they suspected of illegal activity. This was actually accepted by both the British government and President Monroe, but the issue foundered in the Senate, where various pro-slavery senators deliberately tacked on a bunch of amendments that both sides knew would be completely unacceptable in a successful effort to scuttle the agreement entirely. Tartar's absence was made up for by the arrival of the 36-gun HMS Iphigenia and Commodore Menz, restoring the West Africa Squadron to six vessels, plus the tender left behind by the Alligator and the schooner Augusta, which had been left behind by USS Shark. There was even a French brig, Huron, which was sailing about in a vague attempt to enforce France's own anti-slavery position, even if they wouldn't let anyone else do it. Between them, half a dozen slave ships were captured in the first quarter of 1822, following which Iphigenia took two other ships with her back to the River Bonny. Aware of the resistance Myrmidon had faced before, since Myrmidon came with her this time, Menz ordered six large boats loaded with 150 men, with guns placed aboard, and sent the whole force upriver. Sure enough, they found six slave ships in the river. Two schooners turned to open fire on the approaching sailors, who duly returned fire and boarded them. The two schooners turned out to be Spanish, while the other four ships were French. The Spanish ships had also forced some of the slaves aboard them to fight the boarding party and were heavily overloaded, with 705 slaves split across the two small vessels. After interrogating the surviving slavers, as about two dozen of them had been killed in the fighting, it turned out that the idea of forcing the slaves to fight the British was the product of the captain of the schooner Icanum, the other schooner being the Vicua. It also turned out that a 12-year-old slave girl had been found chained on Icanum's slave deck with a short, thick iron chain attached to the mast. I'll leave exactly why this was to your imagination. Disgusted and affronted in equal measure, the British sailors set the girl free and dragged Icanum's captain down, chained him up by the neck instead, and left him there surrounded by his erstwhile captives. Of the other four ships, the French ones, three had joined in the fighting, while one, the Theodore, had simply watched. Thus, all were boarded. It was found Theodore was actually just there to trade in legitimate goods, and since it hadn't fired on the British, she was allowed to get about her business. But the other three had over 800 slaves between them. And while they couldn't technically be seized for slaving, due to being under the French flag, they had fired unprovoked on the Royal Navy, so they were instead taken as prizes with the crews charged with piracy instead. Capturing another slaver, this time Portuguese, on the way back to Freetown, Commodore Menz rationalised the large collection of prizes by balancing out the number of slaves on each ship and scuttling the two vessels which had proved most unseaworthy. Sadly, the Icanum was then caught in a storm and capsized shortly thereafter, taking all hands with her. But the rest of the ships, with the surviving slaves, were all taken to the various appropriate courts. Morgiana and Pheasant went home in summer 1822, replaced with the sloops Sirene, Ban, and Driver, although this slight increase was soon offset by Myrmidon then having to be recalled for a refit. The renewed squadron made over a dozen captures during the rest of the year, including two ships found empty but equipped for slaving by HMS Sirene, which found letters aboard showing exactly where and when they were due to pick up their slaves. And so Sirene headed over there, found a slave factory, which fired on the ship's boats and thus forced the sailors to land under fire, but they seized the guns, turned them on the rest of the factory's staff, then spiked them, burned the factory to the ground, and sailed off. Shortly thereafter, Sirene was approached by a representative of the local tribe who offered to send them the slaves that were about to be sold to the slavers anyway if the slave ships hadn't been captured. These slaves were sent to Freetown and set free. This precedent of force seemed to work, as when another slave ship was captured in similar circumstances, Cyrene showed up to a letter already waiting for them from that area's chieftain, promising to hand over the waiting slaves for liberation, just as long as Cyrene didn't burn his town to the ground as well. Also in 1822, Foreign Secretary Castlereagh died, but the new one, Canning, was an ardent abolitionist, and having failed to get agreement from the other European powers to treat slavery the same as piracy, he instead changed tack to using specific leverage with each nation to get more concessions on the subject. Over the next few years, he would succeed in getting further agreements from three European nations, as well as Brazil and the United States, which we'll address when those become relevant. The first two worth mentioning were further agreements with the Netherlands and Spain, both of which by the start of 1823 had agreed that vessels under their flags caught fitted for slaving could be seized, even if they'd had no slaves aboard them at the time, something that had applied to other slaving vessels beforehand, but was now more widely enforceable. Commodore Menz also returned, having taken Iphigenia back to the UK during the winter. He and his crew had transferred to the larger 42-gun HMS Owen Glendower and had headed back to the African coast. But it was the end of poor old Thistle. Having spent 3.5 years on station, she was so badly worn that she was sent home to be broken up. Her captain, Captain Hagen, had somehow survived twice that long on various ships on the station and had captured a total of 33 slave ships, resulting in the release of almost 100 times that number of slaves. Unfortunately, that spring saw an outbreak of yellow fever spread through the squadron that claimed just over 100 lives of various British sailors in just 3 months. The remaining men and ships had to then balance trying to support British efforts in a war with the Ashanti, along with their anti-slavery patrols. Here, their efforts were beginning to have an effect onshore as much as offshore, with a number of local kings and chiefs voluntarily returning slaves who were landed on their shores by slaver ships seeking to divest themselves of their human cargo before they were overhauled. Although at one point the Owen Glendower was so overwhelmed with the number of freed slaves that the crew had to make most of the voyage back to Sierra Leone on 1/4 rations just so that everybody aboard had something to eat. The year continued unevenly, with Snapper having to go home, having been nominated to distribute her fit crew to the rest of the squadron, who then collectively manned her in return with their sick men, making sure that there were at least enough what you might term walking wounded to operate the ship. Additionally, Commodore Menz took ill and died on the deck of his flagship in September. Ban had to leave for repairs and Cyrene was ordered home, the only bright spot of the latter part of 1823 being the arrival of the brig HMS Swinger, with Thistle's veteran crew having been transferred to the new ship. 1824 didn't start off any better, as there was confusion over the newly independent Brazil, and if the treaties signed with Portugal still applied to ships under the Brazilian flag, which led to three slave ships captured at great hazard having to be released, and Commodore Menn's replacement, Commodore Fillmore, had to head home after he too caught one of the many fevers endemic to the region. With command temporarily in the hands of Lieutenant Walcombe, who was immediately faced with having to weigh into the Ashanti War again when the latter marched a large army of around 10,000 men into action far faster than the British ground units had anticipated, which led to a mixed force of around 500 men, half British and half locals, being overwhelmed when they were attacked from all sides and eventually ran out of ammunition, which resulted in the death of the British governor who had accompanied that detachment. By April, the sloop HMS Victor, with a new squadron commander, Thomas Prickett, had arrived, and while the fallout of the Ashanti's success was being dealt with ashore, there were still more slavers to capture, and the Victor proved to be an unusually swift vessel. In April, pursuing three suspicious ships, on catching the slowest, they discovered that the largest of the three, the brig Romano, was both slaver and pirate. Having captured the other two ships and seized their legitimate cargoes with the intention of trading the goods for slaves. Victor duly chased down the Romano, only to see the crew abandon ship in a boat that was clearly heavily laden with the most valuable goods, only for the boat to then be observed to break up on hitting heavy surf near the shoreline. Concluding that Providence had judged the crew of the Romano, Victor sailed off after other targets. In May, another frigate, the 36-gun Maidstone, arrived with an even more senior officer, Commodore Bullen, who'd seen action at the battles of the glorious 1st of June, Camperdown, and Trafalgar. Maidstone relieved the Owen Glendower, as well as the driver. By this point, the Ashanti War was going a little better, but supplies for key strong points had to be ferried to them by sea, and thus by the squadron's ships, since it was far too dangerous to go overland just yet. The Ashanti were eventually driven back in a series of battles in which British efforts were greatly aided when Captain Scott went ashore with some of his ship's guns, and their crews, the naval firepower adding tremendous offensive punch to the engagements. However, by summer, the squadron reported almost every slaver they found was flying either French or Brazilian flags, making captures much harder as the lack of significant treaties of inspection with these nations meant time and effort had to be expended to try and work out which ships were under completely false colours and which ships might actually be from those countries. But the start of 1825 brought slightly better news. After numerous reports from the squadron that British citizens were still being caught slaving, just under foreign colours, a new act had made its way through Parliament. Since fines and prison time had proved ineffective, and even sentence to transportation to Australia clearly wasn't enough, the new law stated that any British subject found to be involved in slaving would be charged with, and to quote, felony, piracy, and robbery, and should suffer death without the benefit of clergy and loss of lands, goods, and chattels as pirates, felons, and robbers on the seas ought to suffer. However, the divide between those on station and those at home who wanted the slave trade to be stopped as much as possible, and those at home who were still trying to sabotage things, can be seen in the case of the Swinger, which, in February, was fired on while investigating a number of ships found at anchor off of what is now Nigeria. Rather understandably, having been fired upon, Swinger returned fire. The vessel which had shot at them then tried to board the brig, and understandably that didn't end particularly well for the boarding party. With much of the enemy crew now either captured or dead, the British then counterboarded the vessel and found her to be a Spanish pirate ship. Since she didn't have any slaves aboard, Swinger's captain instead elected to throw all of the weapons and ammunition, from cannon down to pistols, overboard, and then let the ship and its surviving crew go on its way. But absurdly, some of those who commanded desks back in London sought to censure Captain Clerkson for somehow being overly aggressive, despite him having been fired on first. They also tried to accuse him of unlawful destruction of private property in the form of the pirate ship's guns. Luckily, Commodore Bullen stepped in and pointed out that the squadron's orders said, as well as suppressing the slave trade, they had to assist British commerce, and he judged that disarming an aggressive pirate helped British commerce, and thus he considered the matter closed. Faced with the prospect of the ire of the many legitimate merchant traders who the pirates had been harassing, as well as the displeasure of the officers of the squadron, the matter was dropped. But more good news arrived in the form of the 28-gun HMS Athol, the 22-gun HMS Esk, and the 12-gun HMS Conflict. Welcome reinforcements who'd already liberated almost 300 slaves from a schooner that they'd found while on their way south. Although the issue with French flagships initially seemed to be solved with the arrival of the French brig Dragon, it quickly transpired that the French prize court in Senegal was so infested with pro-slavery officials that everything that the poor brig captured and sent in for condemnation was released and allowed to return to slaving. As the fast-sailing Victor had to be sent home for refit that summer, the rest of the squadron, being made up of slower-sailing vessels, made few captures, although the ones they did get tended to be bigger, slower ships, with several hundred slaves liberated with each ship taken. Another fast ship, HMS Red Wing, was sent out by way of replacement with a crew made up of previous veterans of the West Africa Station, but she grounded on her voyage on the way south and lost most of her good sailing qualities as a result of the damage. Tensions with Spanish pirate slavers were escalating, though. Two such vessels with a combined 500 or so slaves put up significant resistance to Red Wing using cannon and small arms. Although this effort largely netted them little but an aggressive boarding, with one of the ships sent to Freetown with a 14-strong prize crew. On its way there, the ship ran into a Brazilian slaver and managed to seize that as well, but then yet another Spanish pirate slaver appeared and captured both of the prizes, murdering or mutilating all the prize crew members who had done their best to defend the ships. The survivors noted the name of the pirate ship to the rest of the squadron in case they ran into it again. The sloop HMS Brazen added still more strength to the squadron, and a steady stream of captures began to flow. Brazen herself managed to free several hundred slaves despite capturing a Spanish slaver with only 5 slaves aboard, as Captain Wiles managed to get his Spanish equivalent to confess to heading up to pick up more slaves and where he was going. So instead of heading for Freetown, he sailed to the pickup point instead and ordered the local chief to hand over the slaves anyway. The chief refused, since he obviously now wasn't going to be paid. Wiles countered that if he didn't, then Brazen would level the town with its guns, and soon 231 additional slaves were brought to the shore, whereupon they were distributed between the Brazen and the slave ship, with both vessels heading to Freetown and all the slaves then being released. The newly arrived governor of Sierra Leone, one Governor Turner, didn't particularly like the Royal Navy, mostly because they didn't fall under his control, and they knew it. But weirdly, this actually led to overall benefits for all parties, well, unless you happen to be a slaver. This was because Turner got into his head that he could prove that he could do a better job than the Royal Navy by outdoing them at their own roles. And so he ordered a shallow draft, heavily armed steamship brought out from Britain, and bought a pair of French brigs which had been condemned for slaving in the Freetown courts. Heavily arming this small flotilla and using his authority as governor, he set out along the coastline, setting up a labyrinthine scheme which started off with a submit or die order when his forces showed up at a local ruler's town. Given the firepower disparity, they generally chose the submit portion of that deal, at which point he told them that as long as they gave up slaving, he would guarantee their safety against all local tribes by placing them under British protection. He would then move on to repeat the process, and within a year, a bunch of local kingdoms near Sierra Leone were caught up in a rather tangled web where they'd all agreed to stop slaving, and none of them could attack any of the others because all of them had been promised Turner's protection in the event of that occurring. This forced the slavers formerly based in these territories to move to other areas, which served to concentrate both the land-based slave traders and the ships that were buying from them, such that in December 1825 and January 1826, the squadron was able to seize enough slavers to free over 1,000 slaves in what was normally a bit of a dead period. Also in January 1826, the survey ship Levin and the brig Barracuda showed up. They had spent the best part of the last 4 years completing a full hydrographic survey of the entire African coast from Gibraltar all the way around to the Red Sea, at the cost of more than half the men who'd started the voyage. However, Captain Owen of the Levin, who'd been temporarily delayed in his survey work a couple of years back when, halfway up the East African coast, he'd paused for a bit to set up a one-man anti-slavery kingdom on the coast of what is now Kenya, well, now he heard of Governor Turner's plan to attack the relocated slavers on the Bolm River, and so he paused his final surveys to join up in the assault. The slaving town was burned to the ground for minimal British losses, but Turner caught a fever and the governor then died in March, temporarily bringing an end to efforts to wipe out the slave trade on land, in addition to the Royal Navy's seagoing efforts. Athol was now ordered to India, but on the way Captain Murray seized the slaver Activio. But thanks to a prolonged chase, she was captured just south of the equator. Her owners thus initially successfully argued in court for almost £11,000 in damages against Murray, as although it was proven they'd illegally taken slaves north of the equator, they maintained that by crossing it, it meant that you were now out of jurisdiction. However, the matter was then escalated back to London and to Brazil, the slaver's nation of origin, whereupon the whole thing was quickly dismissed. We'll wrap up this episode with a brief recounting of another incident that showed just how much danger was involved in this posting, apart from the usual privations of the sea, the rampant tropical disease, and the occasional efforts by slavers to resist being boarded. Prize crews were often in danger from both the slaver crews and an increasing number of pirates. We've seen a few examples briefly mentioned earlier. But in this particular case, it all starts when the brigantine Netuno was seized by master's mate Richard Crawford from HMS Esk, with a final total of 92 slaves tallied aboard. Along with 5 other British sailors, 4 of the brigantine's own crew, and 2 teenagers, one from Esk and the other from Netuno, the ship headed for Freetown. But it proved a slow sailer, and after 2 weeks, a fast brig appeared aft and to starboard. Crawford initially slowed and closed, thinking it was the Red Wing, but the Nettuno's master thought that this was a pirate vessel, and it turned out that he was right, as the brig closed in while not hoisting colours until the last moment, when it then fired across Nettuno's bow and ran up a French flag. Crawford ordered the handful of six-pounders aboard to be loaded, and when the boat from the strange brig appeared alongside, the main man aboard it began trying to threaten the British prize crew in Spanish, which rather undermined the French flag ruse. After some time was wasted in finding somebody who could translate, Crawford communicated that his ship was under British control and he didn't believe the brig to be really French anyway. The act was then dropped and the master of the boat admitted to being from Havana, and he ordered his men to board the Nettuno. Instead, Crawford, who had retrieved a brace of pistols under the guise of retrieving the ship's papers, shot the man in question, as well as the man who was holding the boat to the Nettuno. Then a loaded six-pounder was aimed at the other men in the boat, who were then ordered into the sea. The brig, now identified as the Caroline, saw that their ruse was discovered and raked the Nettuno with gunfire. With just himself, the Nettuno's master, one sailor and one of the boys still on the upper deck, Crawford and the boy manned the guns. The ship's master ran to get powder and shot, and a sailor by the name of Frost took the wheel. Over the next 2 hours, the three-man gun crew fired the pitiful array of six-pounders, one at a time, at the Caroline, while the pirate tried to shoot away Nettuno's sails and rigging. When Crawford was hit in the head by a large splinter and knocked out, Sailor Frost abandoned the wheel to take his place on the guns. Taking careful aim, he placed a beautiful shot into the forecastle of the Caroline, sending a massed boarding party scattering like ninepins. With almost 24 visibly dead and many more wounded, thanks to the small prize crew's excellent gunnery, the Caroline fell away and vanished, never to be seen again. With just 4 rounds of ammunition left, Nettuno eventually limped into Freetown. Crawford was promoted on the spot, joining the commissioned ranks as a lieutenant, although thanks in part to his wound he would shortly be sent home for some months to recover. But he would return later in the year, and we'll meet him again in episode 3.
That's it for this video. Thanks for watching. If you have a comment or suggestion for a ship to review, let us know in the comments below. Don't forget to comment on the pinned post for dry dock questions.